figured out what I'm supposed to do. I mean, I suppose I almost have this expectation that I'm going to, you know, the Lord's going to sort of entertain me since I graced him by go ahead and going in, that, you know, he's going to, you know, just kind of do something. And I, sometimes I kind of, it frustrates me a little bit. I kind of get in and start popping around all the different places and nothing's really happening. And I almost take offense.
Okay.
And, you know, and I, which isn't a very good, isn't really my right, a right response. I just have to be able to learn that it's okay, that it, you know, things don't always have to be, you know, shaken to be able to be okay.
Oh, yeah. But when you go in, why don't you decide what you want to do rather than waiting for something to happen? Because when I go in, I engage, but I choose where I go, and I choose, yeah, if I need to go to Iron Mountain, I choose what to do there based on, you know, what my spirit leads. But generally, I'm not reactive in the situation. The pathways of those engagements are places I can go back to. I just let my spirit sort of direct me where to go, but I choose where to go. Obviously, if I go around the Ark and I'm looking for a mandate or I'm looking for to engage God, that's great, but I choose to go there rather than it being something which just happens to me, or I'm looking for something. You know, it's more that I know where I'm going, and I go with a particular mandate to do something generally. I mean, sometimes even if I'm going to maybe the garden or Throne of Grace, you know, I'm going there with a particular purpose. In other words, you know, I'm going to find grace and mercy at this point, or enter rest, or, yeah, you know, choose to come to that place of rest. I mean, I think that sort of would probably be something that would be helpful. You know, what is it that you're looking to do when you step into the realm of heaven? You know, what's your expectation of stepping in there? As you say, if it's just sort of to be entertained, then then in that sense, obviously you're gonna.
Well, you know, I guess that's not really that's kind of a poor.
Yeah.
Poor choice. I think what I've needed is rest,
yeah,
because that's what I, you know, that's where I end up going.
Mm.
And I just need, you know, I need the peace, I need to rest. And it's kind of good. I ended up with a mountain called Peace.
Mm.
And inside the mountain there's a couple places to be able to go to in there, and one of them's really, really good. One of the problems that I have from time to time is I kind of end up with my screen burnt, too many images. When I close my eyes, you know, if I've been surfing the internet, you know, all I can see is what I've been looking at, or,
right,
you know, in my imagination, I close my eye, you know, it's like I'm still looking at the screen of my computer or something.
Okay, yeah.
And the Lord gave me this place, and it's like in there, there's a place that I go into, and none of the imagery that's kind of spinning around in my head is able to, like, gain a foothold in there. So I can, it's like I watch, and then, you know, the images are starting to form up, but they just kind of fall away. And I'm able to really rest in there. And it's really quite nice.
Okay, yeah. So have you, in terms of the images that are generally there in your imagination, have you sort of done anything to cleanse that gateway? I'm just in cleansing the imagination in terms of just blotting out those images which may be cluttering it up, clearing out the memories. That's something that I did quite effectively in terms of just blotting out any negative images or any images just that were, you know, filling up my screen. You know, I went to that gate, my imagination gateway, and basically dealt with all those images to make it clearer and less confused.
So. Yeah. Part of it's my problem. If I've been looking at the computer too much, when I close my eyes, I can still see the screen.
Mm.
So I have to pull off for a little bit and kind of really, really center myself. Or all I'm looking at is, you know, is at the screen. But yeah, I have cleansed the gateways in my imagination and that helped a lot, because I was what was happening was I was experiencing like some old imagery from other stuff. I'd be looking at Jesus on his throne and it wasn't Jesus.
Mm.
And I knew that it was Jesus, but I was like having this other, you know, something else was coming up, and so that's when I started like closing, you know, kind of cleansing the gateways, and I began, especially the gateways of my imagination, that's when that began shutting down.
Mm.
But it was kind of disconcerting to go to worship the Lord and then have, somebody else like sitting on the throne, and I didn't know what to make of that. And it's like, what are you doing in here? And I'm not worshiping you. And I, you know, engaging them wasn't gonna resolve anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is to keep a regular inventory and checkup. You know, because it just sometimes I'm just sensitive that some of my gateways, or I'm not feeling quite flowing, then I just go back and check up. Is there anything I need to repent of? Is there anything I need to blot out in terms of images? Because sometimes it's like we pick up, I mean, Jesus described it as like we pick up the dust on the feet through walking through life. He said, look, your hands are clean. You know, everything's been done for you by the cross, but actually sometimes as we walk around life, we pick up dust. We just need to shake that dust off sometimes, and sometimes it is just the things we've seen in normal life. There's nothing necessarily wrong with them. It's just, you know, there's only so much activity our mind can take at one time, and sometimes we just need to clear it out, you know, do some clearing of it out, and then it effectively, you know, becomes clean again, and no dust, no sort of just picking up the things of life that just sometimes just block the flow, you know. So it's sometimes worth doing a regular just check up and just making sure that there isn't a blockage or an overload, as you say, of images. Clean them all out and start fresh.
I have gone back and checked from time to time. I've gone back and found them blocked again.
Mm.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. But the Lord had prompted me to go check it out. And when I did, there was a block. And how I encountered that was when I would go to my first, you know, open the gate of first love. There would be like a barrier, or it didn't want to open, or it didn't want to stay open. And so that's when I started kind of looking. It's like, okay, what's going on here? And then, you know, I found that one of my gates was blocked, and so, you know, I just started kind of routinely, you know, checking them, like you said. That helped.
Yeah, okay. So is there anything particularly you want to look at today, or? I don't know whether Steve can actually hear us or not. Looks like there's an image there, but... not really sure whether it's actually him being online or not, but anyway. So is there anything you want to...
Well, when operating out of a bench, are there protocols when the three come together, when we begin to come together and operate out of that place, are we able to just kind of communicate? And then how do you, is it necessary to like to convene the bench and position ourselves in heaven to be able to, you know, operate to conduct the business before us? Are there protocols, or is it, how would you describe that?
Okay. Well, in a sense, benches have to operate relationally, so you have to establish the relational connections and the culture of honor and be at a place where you can be one heart and one mind. That obviously takes some time to develop for most groups and most people. How our bench works, you know, we come together physically, so you know we come and sit and chat and ask, yeah, you know, sometimes just ask each other how things are going, and you know, has God been showing you anything, you know, just to catch up and pick up. You know, there are some particular things that we know that we're called to administrate, so we'll ask each other, you know, how do you think that's going? You know, generally just making sure that we're connected relationally. You know, when we step into heaven together, we're looking for the aspects of in each individual perspective that God will give to make a bigger picture. So generally, let's say we go to see for a mandate, or we go to maybe engage our scroll or our book, we'll go and we're not really focused too much on that we need to see each other or we need to engage each other there, although sometimes that's happened. But generally, we're looking to say, okay, what does God want me to engage in here? What does he want to show me? What revelation? What do I need to bring? To bring my part to the party today. And so then once we've done that, and we then usually sort of step back out together and we share. You know, this is what I saw, this is what I felt, this is what God was showing me, this is the place I was. And then each of us will share, and we'll usually share from our different perspectives, and that makes a bigger picture. So what we submit to each other, and we are honoring each other's different perspectives, not trying to compete with each other or trying to see one perspective as more important than the others. And then once we've established the different things that God is revealing through us, then we'll try and we'll see how that then gives us that bigger picture. What do we conclude from what we've seen? And it's like, oh, okay, God's showing us this. We're seeing this perspective. And then often from that perspective, then we will then, okay, we need to step back in. We may need to go to the court. We may need then to go to the mountain, or we may need to declare or decree or begin to call. Depending on what it is that we've seen, we may need to go and get a strategy. It may be, okay, the enemy's at work. God has shown us that the enemy has a scheme. What's our strategy for dealing with that scheme? God may have shown us that there are various spiritual dynamics going on. Then we go and we get a strategy for how do we deal with these spiritual dynamics. And then we'll bring that back out and we'll talk about it and discuss it. Okay, is there anything we then need to, do we need to assign angels? You know, we'll do those things together, and it will be something that then we come to unity about. So we never do anything unless we're fully agreed. Unless we're fully, and if one of us would like to do something and the other two aren't, or even two and the other one isn't quite there yet, then we will wait, we'll submit that to each other, and we'll wait until we come to a point of unity. Because it's really, really important that one person doesn't set the agenda, or two people don't, that the three of us, having heard God, are able to work together. And that takes some time. You know, you have to be willing to humble yourself. Sometimes, you know, I see things really clearly, but maybe the timing isn't right. So God shows me something. The other two, well, we're not sure yet, and we'll wait. Waiting to get the timing and waiting for the sense of being together in it, that then we know that we can step into any position and come with a one heart perspective. Yeah, we tend to come, you know, I tend to come with a sort of an apostolic picture or a blueprint perspective. One of our others, Bench, comes with a more prophetic perspective that often gets linked to dreams and visions that they've seen that add to what we receive. And the other one comes from a more kingly perspective of bringing order of what we need to do with this. How do we put this into a strategy? You know, how do we outwork this? You know, and so for me, it's like I bring stuff and then I'm looking for the perspective of, well, what do we need to do? And I'm not really bothered about that. I'm quite happy for someone who's gifted in that area to say, hey, this is what I feel that we can do in result of this. Sometimes we get directly those things from God. Sometimes we bring them out of the things that we feel God is inspiring each person. But it works. You know, it works together. You know, and sometimes when we come together, we spend more time just catching up with each other, making sure we're okay, making sure that, you know, that we're there ministering. Sometimes it's like, I mean, I'll be sharing some stuff that's going on and they'll give some insight into it. You know, it's a relationship. It's not just about doing the government. It's making sure that we're in relationship, that then that government is going to be more effective. And so having an openness and an honesty and a transparency, being able to speak the truth to each other, you know, is all part of it. It's all part of being in that place where we honor each other, trust each other, and we function well with each other. So certainly protocols, you know, we don't want to get into, in a sense, a formula, but we do want to work well together, and therefore there's a sense where we wait for each other and we encourage each other in it, and we definitely look for the perspectives that the other brings, and sometimes that means that, you know, one of us will be speaking less, sometimes another one will be speaking more, and God will show them more, because actually what we need to know right at this point in time is more kingly government and order. Sometimes we need to get more. This is a bigger picture of the blueprint. Sometimes we need a definite prophetic. This is what is God's purpose in this right now. See that picture. And therefore, then we have different sort of parts to play in that. And sometimes it will be more one and more the other. But because we're in that place of honor, then that doesn't matter. You know, I don't need to always be saying something. I can actually listen, and as I'm listening, I'm looking to draw from the heavenly perspective, well, what is this? Because I sometimes see, you know, my gift is putting it into a picture that sees it from the bigger perspective. So sometimes when the other person's bringing something, you know, my spirit is putting it into order, putting it into place. All right, yeah, that fits with this, this, and this, you know. But, you know, it works really well once you're working in that level of intimacy. Obviously, when you first start, you know, you can't drive a 10-ton truck over a matchstick bridge. You know, you have to establish the relational connection before you can bring some more things over that bridge. You know, so there are things that I might see that I wouldn't necessarily say to people when I'm not in the level of relationship that will sustain that. So I need to then look to build a relationship which can establish some more heavy duty stuff that we share. Because, you know, it's about honor and respect, and that builds. Now, we spent a good foundational time here looking to really deal with those issues, develop them, and so that we're in a place now of being one heart with each other, and everything generally functions. It's very rarely that we see anything differently. In terms of what we would do or what we need to do, we bring different perspectives, but that then we always sort of come to a sense of, yeah, we're in agreement together over things. Is there anything more specific on that?
Well, I guess what I'm asking, I get the building relationship with one another. I get that. I guess we're the you know when we're working on an assignment and the Lord's given us a mandate regarding a specific effort, when we begin to address that in order to be able to dismantle that in process from the bench, what are the I feel a burden of re there's a level or a burden of responsibility in regards to that I sense in regards to this, and my concern is, being able to steward it right. I don't want to do something half-baked and call it good, and just kind of, well, it wasn't that good. Well, if I'm not feeling like we were really focused and addressed this. And yeah, God loves us. If we're dealing with high-level stuff, He's probably not going to let Him cream us. But I want to be able to deal with these things, in protocol, in process, so that it's effective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I understand that. I think in that there's always timing. Just because you see something doesn't necessarily mean it's right now that we have to deal with it. And a lot of the things that we get to deal with have been there a long time. And there are sort of multi-dynamics around them. You can do something in the heavens, but actually sometimes the atmosphere needs to be dealt with through the angelic. Sometimes you have to do things on the earth as a outworking of what's been done in heaven. There are different ways to function in some of these things, and timing is key, and you shouldn't be carrying a weight of responsibility if it's heavy, because Jesus said, "My yoke is easy and my burden's light." So even if you see an important, hey, this is really important, this is a national issue, whatever, it's like it shouldn't be heavy weighing you down and therefore pushing you to do something maybe before it needs to be done. Don't feel ever stressed or striving or pressured into it, because that isn't what God wants us to feel. Once we're in relationship with Him, yoked with Him, in joint heirship with all these things in the kingdom, then His burden's light. I never feel heavy about anything, and I carry a lot of responsibility for a lot of things, but actually that responsibility never weighs me down, because I have to come from a place of rest. Otherwise, I'm going to be tempted to try and do something because I think it needs to be done because I've seen something, and that's the danger. And so that's where the balance of the other two people of the bench comes in. Because sometimes we can be, I've seen this, we really need to deal with this, and how are we going to deal with it? And we need to deal with it now. And the reality is, the other two people may feel, yeah, we see that, but we don't feel the urgency right now. And because we may need to do some preparatory work. I mean, we may need to do some different things in the timing of God, because sometimes God shows us something that then will make some other things make sense. But then you do those other things, and then you can then do the thing that you've first seen. And some of it is like weighing that, balancing that, working together to understand the different gifts. Because when someone's is carries a quite strong prophetic gift, they're very much off. Well, often they are. We need to do this now, because this is prophetically significant, and you really need to do it, And someone else who carries a more governmental gift will be looking to how that works in relation to other things, so that you don't do something out of sequence or out of order, because things have consequences, and there are consequences that happen when we do things out of order. And I can always remember a story of, you know, in Africa or somewhere, I can remember it being in some park, and they brought some animal into the park that wasn't there previously, thinking, well, this would deal with this. Didn't realize that what they did, that they took all the food source out for another group of animals, and didn't realize by introducing this it affected the others. And there are things like that that need careful consideration when it comes to, you know, dealing with some pretty high level things. And I think, you know, making sure that we're not heavy. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be responsible for things, but it should always be from a perspective that, A, I'm yoked to Jesus, and he carries the majority of the load, and the burden that I do have in terms of government, should be light, you know. And that keeps it in right perspective. Yeah, and you know, and we have that sometimes. There is a prophetic burden, an urgency, that we just submit to each other, and then, because, you know, I would have done some pretty, you know, interesting things if the other two hadn't held me back a couple of times, because they would say, "Yeah, I'm not quite sure that will be the best way of dealing with this quite at this moment. Maybe we need to just wait to look at this and look at that." And I'm thinking, and at the time I was like, well, actually no, I think this is a biblical warrant, we need to do this. But I'm really glad that I waited, because their suggestion of how to deal with something, although at the time, you know, I thought I had a very biblical warrant to do what I was wanting to do, and probably did, it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do, even though it was a let's say, something which was biblically correct, but wasn't necessarily the wisest thing in that situation, and could have inflamed the situation rather than help calm it down. And so I've learned to respect and trust them in those viewpoints, and not be so reactive in certain things. And the same way goes around. Sometimes, you know, they want to, there's like, well, yeah, I think we need to do this, and I just get a sort of check in my spirit, and it's like, okay, well, let's engage that some more. Let's get some, because I feel there's something we haven't quite seeing here, and so we work well together like that. But you know, in the process, a lot of stuff gets unveiled, and you learn to understand each other better, and you learn to pick up the signals from each other, and you just become more relational, and that grows and develops over time. So I don't think you need to be concerned too much in terms of, we need to get this right, but we're all learning. We're all learning on the job, and we will make mistakes, and we will, you know, get things quite out of perspective sometimes, whatever, and that's okay. Because God isn't going to come down on us like a ton of bricks and crush us. He's wanting to help us learn, because he's a good father. You know, first time your little toddler falls over, you don't go and spank it because it fell over. You pick it up, you say, hey, have another go. You know, and that's what God's like. You know, he wants us to learn from our experiences, and sometimes actually we learn more from not quite getting it right, because then we're actually learning not to be independent and, you know, and trusting in our own strength. You know, and, you know, I've learned a lot from reviewing things, of seeing where, you know, where I could have done it better, and God will do that. He'll help us learn and understand and grow through it. You know, he's not expecting us to be experts in something that we're just beginning to press into and understand. You know, we can't. You know, it's like we know what we know, and we're growing in that as he reveals more. But we don't know everything by far, and therefore, sometimes that's okay. You know, it's okay because God sees the bigger picture of our journey. You know, a scroll can only be opened a portion at a time. you don't open the whole thing out because there isn't enough room to open it all out and walk along the line and have a look at it all. So you see the bit that you need to see at the time. So God reveals what you need to have revealed, because that's what you'll need at this point. You know, it's a bit like, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen the film The Matrix. You know, when Neo goes to the Oracle, Morpheus says, you know, you'll get to hear what you need to hear. And that's what God reveals, what we need, rather than sometimes what we want. Sometimes we want to know everything and we only need to know this. And that's what keeps everything sort of growing and developing and maturing. Because we've not, you know, we don't want to become dependent, you know, independent in the sense. We want to continually be dependent on our relationship with God, which makes us continually go back to Him, you know, and pursue Him for more.
It's quite the process.
Yep.
Hear me or am I muted?
No, I can hear you, yeah, and I can hear you, yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I've enjoyed being able to engage with others, you know, in that place, and just the process and relationship building. It's process. I haven't had a lot of people to engage with in regards to these materials. The Lord's had me pretty isolated here where I'm at. I haven't been able to talk really to a lot of people about these things, which has been really unusual, because a year ago I was around a lot of people and for years in the past. And then when I began engaging in this place, the Lord moved me out of the ministry and the place where I was at and set me out here in this wilderness. And I've continued to engage, but I haven't had a lot of people to process with.
Yeah.
And so it's been a pretty well faith walk for me. Sometimes the stuff that I've seen, I wasn't really too sure about, and I really needed to talk to somebody, but there wasn't anybody, and so I was kind of left trying to, you know, sort the whole thing out on my own.
Yeah,
and I think that's not always good.
No, it's not. But I think, you know, in those things that, you know, we're not sure about, that's the thing to go back to God with, and continue to meditate around it, and to question and talk to Him and build a relationship with Him, which flows, you know, when we begin to take things back. Good sometimes to talk to others and have an opportunity to bounce things off and just get that sort of support from others to make, you know, we're not totally crazy, we're not totally off the wall, but some of the things we do see are pretty crazy, and not everyone will understand. And talking to the right people is really important. You know, if you talk to people that are going to not understand, then they can be discouraging. Talking to people that are on the same journey, it's like, actually, yeah, there's a whole load of things we don't understand, and we're in a process, so it's okay. It's okay to, you know, work things out as we go and to continue the process. We don't need to understand everything now. Sometimes I've had experiences that it's been several years before I've actually come into the revelation of exactly what that experience was, but my spirit received something. But my mind didn't at the point, but it did later on as my spirit opened that up and enabled me to engage. So, yeah, that's okay. It's fine. But hopefully now we've got more people engaging with this stuff. There are more groups and, you know, opportunities for people to bounce things off and to feel safe and secure in sharing some of the weird and wacky stuff that sometimes we do see. And not think that people are going to think that we're completely lost the plot, but that's okay, you know. It's a much safer environment now that there are a lot more people involved, so, which is good. Awesome. Hi, Steve. All right.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Sorry, I tried to get on, but I couldn't. I don't know what was going on. I dug back to your email, and there you were. I've been trying for half an hour.
Okay, all right. Yeah, we saw you there. You were actually in, but it just didn't seem to connect up fully through.
Oh, geez. I was like, oh, they're probably looking at me, and I don't know what I'm doing anyway.
Okay. So have you got anything you want to share or talk about today?
I don't know. I was reading Ian's book again, and he's talking about the garden, his garden experience and the garden of the heart. I know we've talked about the garden of the heart, and I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about that, the garden of our heart, God's heart, and yeah. Anyway, does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Okay. I mean, I think, you know, the whole garden analogy, you know, the Bible is heavily sort of filled with garden analogy, and obviously you get from the very beginning that it all took place in a garden, and, you know, you have Eden being described as the garden of God, and that in Ezekiel 28 is described that way, also as the mountain of God. So, you know, the garden, you know, and the mountain, you know, they're all in the same sort of dimensional place that we can engage in them. And then, you know, subsequently to Adam and Eve, you know, losing access into that heavenly garden, although, you know, I do believe they could have gone back through the fiery sword if they'd chosen to embrace the fire, but they chose the bushes and the leaves, which didn't work out too well. But, you know, subsequently to that, then, you know, we have sort of an internalized connection that once we're born again and our spirit becomes active and the kingdom is in us, then we have access back into the Eden, and so we can access the river of life that flows out of Eden and flows into our spirit. But it's no point having it flowing in if there's no flowing out. You know, the Dead Sea has the water flowing in one end but doesn't come out the other end and ends up pretty dead and nothing much going on there. So there needs to be a flow out. So in that original garden, you know, the garden flowed from Eden, flowed into the garden that Adam and Eve, and then was supposed to flow out of that garden to water the earth. It flowed into four rivers that watered the earth. And so now equating that to what's going on in us, you know, we have our spirit, which is connected to Eden in the realm of heaven. The river of life is flowing into our spirit, but it needs to flow from our spirit into our soul, into our heart. The garden of our heart is a representation of the soul. And the river of life needs to flow there. And it's, I think Psalm 23 is a really good sort of scriptural illustration of that garden. You know, the green pasture, the quiet waters, you know, the presence of God, the restoring of our soul, the Lord being our shepherd, therefore our needs being met in that place of intimacy within that garden, you know, are all sort of pictures representing it. You know, there's some scriptures, I think, in Isaiah and in other places where it talks about, you know, that we are a well-watered garden. So the key is to get that river of life flowing in there. And, you know, and then we can engage it. Now, when I first engaged it myself, I didn't realize, I mean, I'd never even realized I had a garden. You know, I never even realized that my heart was anything more than, you know, a representation, you know, a biblical word that represented my soul. I didn't realize in a sense that it was dimensional and that I could engage it, and therefore the, you know, the understanding of my soul senses wasn't really there, very defined. So once God took me in there, and, you know, I was in there, I just thought I was in a place in heaven, and there was this tree and some grass and a swing and a little bench, and I was being pushed by Jesus and we were talking. I thought, well, this is a cool place, and maybe this is just a hangout place, you know, in heaven somewhere that I can just come and we can chill out and chat and talk and just have fun. Because, yeah, we used to hang out and talk, and then I can't remember exactly how it happened, but I think one day, you know, I was in this place again, and I think Jesus just said, do you realize where you are? And I'm thinking, well, I'm in heaven, but is this a trick question? so I'm not sure. So it was like, you know, and he said, well, no, this is the garden of your heart. And you are responsible to tend and cultivate it. Because that's what Adam and Eve were given responsibility for to do in the garden, to cultivate and to tend it. So I'm sort of thinking, what does that mean? You know, how would I cultivate and tend this garden? But then I sort of realized that the more I spent time there, lying down in green pasture, engaging the shepherd, you know, there's a table set before me in the presence of my enemies, I'm thinking, okay, so there is a source of provision and life. And I saw it for me like a tablecloth, a picnic cloth, set out in the garden, on the green pasture, that there was just things that I could... resources to eat, revelation to absorb, truth to engage with, that God just placed there for me, but in the presence of my enemies, because my spirit has nothing of the enemy within it, but my soul certainly has had a whole load of stuff, like familiar spirits and other things that have had, you know, and the soil of our heart in the parable of the sower was defined in four ways: hard, stony, weedy, and good, you know. And so there seemed to me that I had this very small patch of good soil that had produced some good things, but I needed to look at taking responsibility for the rest of it. So in cleansing my gates and looking to deal with my soul, senses, conscience, imagination, reason, you know, mind, emotions, and will, that more soil was good than before. So now it was, well, what am I going to do with it? And that's when it was like, well, I need to grow some things. And how do I grow some things? Well, maybe what do I grow? And I remember God saying to me, you have the creative responsibility to fill this garden. So I started to play at it. You know, I started to have some fun. Okay, well, I like these flowers. How can I see these flowers grow? And it was, and I was just exploring how creatively I could actually set what was in the garden. And so I began to think about, well, I would really like this tree, and as I began to imagine it, it would begin to be produced in the garden. And then I sort of I had some heavenly encounters, and God said, it's not just about cultivating, you need to tend things. So I would bring the things that I'd received in the realm of heaven, and I would bring them into the garden. So I would bring a scepter, and I'd bring a crown, and I'd bring a mantle, and I'd bring some of the things that I'd received there that would then help me to administrate the things in my garden. So I think one of the key things I learned was how to plant seeds of testimony, because you plant trees in a garden. So I learned to take a testimony, look to take an engagement with heaven or a particular scripture that I've been given revelation of, and I would plant it. So I would think about digging a hole, sticking the seed of that testimony, that memory, that encounter in the hole, getting some water from the river of life, watering it, and then commanding it to grow. And I found that it grew pretty much instantly and had fruit ready for me to partake of. So this would be really where I was taking the testimonies of the things I've encountered, re-engaging with them, experiencing them at another level, and then they became fruit of testimony that I could then eat again and again and again. I could give away to others. So I began to engage there, you know, and that testimony and growing that testimony, using those testimonies as ways of re-engaging with those encounters, was a place where I could take that encounter into the garden of my heart, meditate in that green pasture, and re-engage it. So they became entrance points back into my experiences and then I could use the fruit of that tree to, in a figuratively, in a sense, if I ate that fruit, I could go back into the experience. It came a doorway back into encounters that I'd had that I needed to go deeper into or experience in another way. So, you know, now I have mountains in my garden, you know, I have river flowing there, you know, lots of things that I've planted, encounters that I've had. I've got a secret place that that place where there was the spring, you know, I've developed that into this place of where I can just go and chill out with God and encounter him. You know, I don't spend as much time there as I used to spend. You know, I go and still plant it, and I still do, because I've learned also that, you know, I need to engage in the responsibility pathway, and so I need to do things in heaven as well. You know, my mountain's there, but they should mirror one another, if you like. You know, my heart should reflect the encounters I've had in the realm of heaven, you know, because it's a representation of who I am. And if I'm going to see the river of life flow out from my heart to produce a atmosphere of the kingdom around my life, then I need to make sure that everything's flowing, not just from my spirit to my soul, but from my soul through my body and around me. So I need to make sure that, you know, I look after that. I cultivate it, I tend it, I make sure that there's nothing growing there, which it shouldn't be. And there are sort of figurative ways of looking at, you know, cleansing gateways and dealing with things. Some people find it easier to think of it in one way, some way or another. But I found that I want to make sure everything's flowing from my spirit, encompassing my soul and my heart, and then flowing out. And think of your own heart. It receives oxygen from the lungs, you know, and it pumps that oxygen around the body, and then that then comes back empty of oxygen to go back to the lungs to pick up more life and then pump it around the body. So there's a continual flow from my spirit to my soul to the body, back to my spirit to my soul to my body, which continually makes me whole and brings a flow of life that should come through my body to around me. So I can produce an atmosphere of the kingdom that people can get healed in, that people can find peace in, that people can find love and joy and rest in, because it flows around my life, that I control the atmosphere, I rule it from what's flowing from the inside out rather than what's coming from the outside in. Because most of what's come from the outside in has actually damaged me, and most everything that flows from the inside out is to restore, make me whole, so that I can actually bring that wholeness to the world. And that's sort of my general take on the garden. Obviously, you have other aspects of the heart, which are the dance floor and the soaking room and the bridal chamber, which is a sort of deeper levels of transformation and intimacy that also the life of God wants us to engage in. But that's a sort of a deeper ongoing relationship that creates, you know, more and more flow and more transformation and in my life. So, yeah.
Right. Well, one of the first exercises that I did with you, you took us into the garden, and from that time on, I had an experience, but I've been having encounters with the Father in this place where I kind of describe him as the shimmering one, and it's dark, but he's kind of got these, he's shimmering like a diamond encrusted, and he's moving. Anyway, I'm in this place, and I feel like I don't know if it's a throne room or the garden, because I go from my garden visualizing this river flowing to me, and as I go up this river, I find this, I'm in this place with him. And then Ian was talking about his experience in the garden and God's garden, and I don't know, it all kind of starts to get confusing after a while.
Well, there are places within Eden, which is God's garden, that we can engage in. So the river of life is flowing there. There's waterfalls there. There are places behind the waterfalls. There's the garden of God where he is at rest and where I can go to really rest. There's the throne of grace. There's the tree of life. There's a judgment seat. There are other places that are associated with that garden that we can explore. You know, we can go, if we open our first love gate, then that doorway into that realm is open to us, and we can explore those. I mean, I go to those places when my spirit leads me there. You know, sometimes I just need to go and sit on his lap on the throne of grace, and I need to just completely do nothing and let him do stuff, because he'll provide grace and mercy. Sometimes I need to go to the tree of life, and I need to take fruit of that tree, because there's something that I need an impartation, or I need to get a scroll from the tree, from the leaves that are scrolls on that tree, because I need a new scroll for a particular purpose. You know, the Garden of God for me is just a total rest. You know, there are some other things in that garden that I've discovered, but generally it's just come and be. Just come and completely be at a place of rest. But there are other dimensional places. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, going through a dark place, then, you know, there's a place where the dark cloud is and where you can engage the person of God, which is, you know, that shimmering, multifaceted, diamond facets of the manifold grace and manifold wisdom of God, which is the person. And that's a sort of totally different dynamic from, you know, God being on his throne, God being, you know, because there are many different thrones, many places that God rules from, you know. They're all slightly different. You know, there's the temple of Isaiah 6, where you have the seraphim and the altar, and you have the train of his robe filling that temple. There's the throne room of Revelation 4 and 5, and, you know, where you thunders and lightnings and the four living creatures, and, you know, there's the tabernacle where the four faces of God manifest. You know, there's the fire stones and the throne where Jesus is sat next to the Father, you know, above all realm. And, you know, they're different. You know, they're just different places of engagement that have seemingly different functions. As you've engaged them, then your spirit will lead you to go to the right place. You know, that's for me. And if you're following the river and it's taking you there, then just engage it and, you know, ask God for more revelation about it. You know, if you're going through the dark cloud and you're engaging the multifaceted face of God, then it's pretty amazing encounter. You know, it's intense usually in there. But there may be other places that also reflect that. You know, that's why heaven is sort of so multiversed, and it's in for us to engage so that we can experience it and enjoy the experience and learn and grow through it. It'd probably be different from you, or from my experiences will be slightly different, because they're tailored for me and yours are tailored for you. But it's okay to explore. But once it becomes your pathway, then you can go any of those places. See, I don't need to go up the waterfall, along the path, alongside the river, to go across the bridge to go into the Garden of God. I can just think about it and I can be there, because it's now part of me. I don't have to walk along a path to now go to the Tree of Life or the Throne of Grace, because they're now, that pathway is in me. I have to just think about it and I can engage it. But when I was learning, I walked the path to find out where things were and get my bearings, you know, and it became a pathway that now is just in me and part of me, if you like, that now leads me to be able to engage in those places. But, you know, when I first started, you know, half the time I had no idea where I was. You know, I was just somewhere where I got led, or somewhere I ended up, and I'm like, where is this? Where does this fit into the relation to everything else? You know, it wasn't until, you know, I kept going back, and then I kept looking and seeing, and I explored, you know, and it's like, well, where does this path go? You know, well, I'm going to follow it and find out, you know. That gave me a sort of a map for me of where things are to enable me to navigate it, you know, easier. Yeah, and now it is the map, which I, you know, it's like the same thing. If you, the first time you travel somewhere, you put your sat nav on, or you get your map out, and or you print your Google Map directions, and you follow the directions to get where you want to go. And you might need to do that a couple of times if it's complicated, but after a while, you know, and you don't need that anymore. You just drive there. You don't even have to think about turning left, turning right, going up here, going up there. You just do it because you've driven that path. It now is part of your memory, and then therefore it's really easy to travel on it. But to start with, you need to learn how to get there. And it's a little bit like that with the different dimensions and places of heaven. You need to learn how to get there, then you just know how to get there and you can go there.
Well, my experience with this one time was I actually just was there and he was there and I had this amazing encounter with him. And then I'm back reading Ian's experience and he's describing things that, I mean, I didn't travel that same. I was just thought about it. Actually, it just appeared before me and I was there in it. I didn't really know what it was. So then trying to listen to other people, you know, I guess our minds are just so used to protocol that there isn't necessarily a protocol for everybody. It sounds like everybody's got, you know, God does things differently. I've always been a quantum leaper, I guess. I leap into something and have an experience, but I feel like I really need to learn how to take the steps and be patient and allow the journey to help me really understand rather than just leaping into something and having an experience.
Yeah. I mean, we do get forerunner experiences that encourage us to know that there's more so that we can pursue those. And God will do that at times. He'll take us. I mean, that was all my experiences. I mean, you know, I've now mapped them out because I've gone back over them and I've produced a map to help me sort of understand where they were. But they were very much initially things that were outside of my control completely. I positioned myself before God and then he took me to places. But then part of that was because he wanted me to teach others and enable others to then learn the principles of how they can find them for themselves. That's the key. I don't want people to just almost like, well, that's what Mike does or that's what Ian does, therefore, well, I can do that. It's just a doorway that opens that then we can find our own experiences and then we will be able to re-engage those experiences rather than just looking at someone else's. Someone else's can be a good starting point to open a doorway, but then we have to go through that door each time. The same with our imagination. We can use our imagination to picture a door. Once we've gone through the door, well, it's whatever happens beyond the door. You know, we can choose to think, well, I'd like this to happen or that happen, and that's fine. But generally, we want to go through the door, and then the experience becomes something which is not something that we're creating. We've just stepped into it, and we're experiencing it and encountering it. But you can learn to develop the pathways that make that easier. You know, I go to the throne of grace. I have and I've been there many times, but each time I go, it's not always exactly the same that God does or he says. Sometimes I listen to his heartbeat and I just feel comforted and I think, oh, that's it, it's done. Sometimes I go there and he talks to me. He wants me to tell him, why have you come here? Not that he doesn't know, but he wants me to tell him, you know, this is what the grace and mercy I need right now because I need this and I'm really struggling with this. And he wants me to offload and unburden myself. And each time, because it's a relationship and it's really the agenda set by God generally rather than me, then I'm just looking to experience what that place unveils for me. And then it becomes, therefore, not a routine or a ritual that we engage in. It's a relationship, and therefore that relationship develops and grows, and God may do this one day, he may do this, because he's multifaceted. You know, he's not confined to doing things one way. So he never gets bored, and I never get bored of him because he's always doing something new. It's always fresh. There's fresh mercies every day. And therefore, I don't want to make assumptions based on past experience, but I do want past experience to become an open doorway into future experience, which will grow. But as you say, it takes practice and patience to walk the same path over and over again until it becomes a path which is yours. And that does take time. You know, I spent a long time, you know, developing my gateways. I spent a long time developing the path of going in and out, and following a pathway. You know, the other day God said, you don't need to hang around so much here. Come up here and do some more stuff. Because I was spending time, you know, on the pathway, and he said, look, you don't need to. And I thought, okay, great. I can just, when I feel led, just go to this place rather than necessarily following the path that I was doing before. Because, you know, it was taking, you know, I guess it was taking too much time. So that's just how it happens. But it's great, you know, because God does that sometimes. You know, I'm following this pathway, and he's like, well, actually, it's treading down enough. You know, come straight over here. You know, take a shortcut today.
Cool.
Which is great. So, yeah. Okay.
So how goes the beta group program? Is that working out?
Yeah, there's a lot of people who've been interested. I think there's about, I don't know, nearly 300 people, I think, who've embraced nice. That from different parts around the world. And some of those are being mentored by people in the alpha groups, and so they've recruited people and they're looking after them and helping them. And some just, you know, have just got on board because of, you know, seeing the invitation somewhere. And eventually I'm looking to try and get all those in the alpha group. There's about 140 people in the alpha group. So all told, that's about, you know, almost 450 people. So there's a lot of interest. And I think, you know, I'm just looking for that to just grow and develop. And you don't have to be that far along the journey to be able to help someone else take the same steps right. and help them. So
I have this friend in Bellevue that I've known for years, and I talked to him about God, and he's questioned and talked about Jesus, and he's just a really inquisitive guy. Well, all of a sudden I sent him Ian's book. And he read it, and he's like, okay, I need to find out more. And so I gave him some of your videos, and he signed up just cold turkey, and he goes, what did you get me into? But he's never experienced any of this stuff before, and he's just totally in love with it. So,
all right, excellent.
I mean,
so who's
no
that?
No experience in anything, and he's just diving in.
Oh, awesome.
He's a financial investor, a really wealthy guy, and he's 57 years old, and just diving in head deep. So it's pretty fun to watch.
Awesome. Yeah, well, that's really fun.
You had said something along the way about tongues and the blood of Jesus, and he emails me, and he goes, so what about this speaking in tongues? So I called him, and the next day he's driving down the road just speaking in tongues, and it's pretty cool how he's just, I mean, transcending, I mean, things that I've seen Christians take years and years and years to get a hold of, he's just grabbing onto it and going. So
amazing.
It's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, that's sort of testimony that it's really good to hear. You know, sometimes I just don't hear all those things because there's so many people and whatever. But when you hear one like that, you think, yeah, great, this is awesome. Because that's what it's designed to do, to take somebody who knows nothing, give them some foundations, and then set them on the pathway of exploration. You know, that's really what it's designed to do. You know, sometimes people who have years and years of experience and they have many, many visions, they find it more difficult to actually form the pathway so that they can do that, you know, in a voluntary way rather than just it happening. So to have someone like that, that's great. Awesome. Excellent.
Well, the cool thing about this particular individual is he's been one of those guys that he'll like dive into cooking, and then it's piano lessons, and then it's this, and then it's that, and so he goes, I wonder what the next thing will be, and I said, well, I think that you're on it, you're on an eternal one now, because it's just endless, you know, you'll never run out of things to explore. And
yeah.
He's like, oh. So, anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Appreciate you being there and setting that thing up, because it's certainly going to bless a lot of people.
Yeah, well, hopefully it will. Yeah, definitely. So that's awesome. All right. Okay. Well, I better leave.
Well, thank you.